Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, from Wikipedia, the free online encyclopedia at wikipedia.org. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were American citizens who spied on behalf of the Soviet Union and were tried, convicted, and executed by the federal government of the United States. They provided top-secret information about radar, sonar, and jet propulsion engines, and were accused of transmitting valuable nuclear weapon designs. At that time, the United States was the only country in the world with nuclear weapons. Other convicted co-conspirators were sentenced to prison, including Ethel's brother, David Greenglass, who had made a plea agreement, Harry Gold, and Morton Sobel. Klaus Fuchs, a German scientist working in Los Alamos, was convicted in the United Kingdom. For decades, the Rosenbergs' sons, Michael and Robert Mirapol, and many other defenders maintained that Julius and Ethel were innocent of spying on their country and were victims of Cold War paranoia. After the fall of the Soviet Union, much information concerning them was declassified, including a trove of decoded Soviet cables, codenamed Venona, which detailed Julius's role as a courier and recruiter for the Soviets, and Ethel's role as an accessory. In 2008, the National Archives of the United States published most of the grand jury testimony related to the prosecution of the Rosenbergs. It revealed that Ethel had not been directly involved in activities contrary to the charges levied by the government. Their son's current position is that Julius was legally guilty of the conspiracy charge, though not of atomic spying, while Ethel was only generally aware of his activities. The children say that their father did not deserve the death penalty and that their mother was wrongly convicted. They continue to campaign for Ethel to be posthumously legally exonerated. In 2014, five historians who had published works based on the Rosenberg case wrote that newly available Soviet documents show that Ethel Rosenberg hid money and espionage paraphernalia for Julius, served as an intermediary for communications with his Soviet intelligence contacts, relayed her personal evaluation of individuals whom Julius considered recruiting, and was present at meetings with his sources. They support the assertion that Ethel persuaded her sister-in-law, Ruth Greenglass, to travel to New Mexico to recruit her brother, David Greenglass, as a spy. Early lives and education. Julius Rosenberg was born on May 12, 1918, in New York City to a family of Jewish immigrants from the Russian Empire. The family moved to the Lower East Side by the time Julius was 11. His parents worked in the shops of the Lower East Side as Julius attended Seward Park High School. Julius became a leader in the Young Communist League USA while at City College of New York, CCNY, during the Great Depression. In 1939, he graduated from CCNY with a degree in electrical engineering. Ethel Greenglass was born on September 25, 1915, to a Jewish family in Manhattan, New York City. She had a brother, David Greenglass. She originally was an aspiring actress and singer, but eventually took a secretarial job at a shipping company. She became involved in labor disputes and joined the Young Communist League, where she met Julius in 1936. They married in 1939. Together, they had two sons, Michael and Robert, born in 1943 and 1947, respectively. Espionage. Julius Rosenberg joined the Army Signal Corps Engineering Laboratories at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey in 1940, where he worked as an engineer inspector until 1945. He was fired when the U.S. Army discovered his previous membership in the Communist Party. Important research on electronics, communications, radar, and guided missile controls was undertaken at Fort Monmouth during World War II. According to a 2001 book by his former handler, Alexander Feklazov, Rosenberg was originally recruited to spy for the Interior Ministry of the Soviet Union, NKVD, on Labor Day 1942 by former spymaster Semyon Semyonov. By this time, following the invasion of Nazi Germany in June 1941, the Soviet Union had become an ally of the United States. Rosenberg had been introduced to Semyonov by Bernard Schuster, a high-ranking member of the Communist Party USA and NKVD liaison for Earl Browder. After Semyonov was recalled to Moscow in 1944, his duties were taken over by Feklazov. Rosenberg provided thousands of classified reports from Emerson Radio, including a complete proximity fuse. Under Feklazov's administration, Rosenberg recruited sympathetic individuals into NKVD service, including Joel Barr, Alfred Sarant, William Pearl, and Morton Sobel, also an engineer. Pearl supplied Feklazov, under Rosenberg's direction, with thousands of documents from the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, including a complete set of design and production drawings for Lockheed's P-80 Shooting Star, the first U.S. operational jet fighter. Feklazov learned through Rosenberg that Ethel's brother, David Greenglass, was working on the top-secret Manhattan Project at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. He directed Julius to recruit Greenglass. In February 1944, Rosenberg succeeded in recruiting a second source of Manhattan Project information, engineer Russell McNutt, who worked on designs for the plants at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. For this coup, Rosenberg received a $100 bonus. McNutt's employment provided access to secrets about processes for manufacturing weapons-grade uranium. The USSR and the US were allies during World War II, but the Americans did not share information about or seek assistance from the Soviet Union regarding the Manhattan Project. The West was shocked by the speed with which the Soviets were able to stage their first nuclear test, Joe 1, on August 29, 1949. Rosenberg case. Arrest. In January 1950, the U.S. discovered that Klaus Fuchs, a German refugee theoretical physicist working for the British mission in the Manhattan Project, had given key documents to the Soviets throughout the war. Fuchs identified his courier as American Harry Gold, who was arrested on May 23, 1950. Gold confessed and identified David Greenglass as an additional source. On June 15, 1950, David Greenglass was arrested by the FBI for espionage and soon confessed to having passed secret information on to the USSR through Gold. He also claimed that his sister Ethel's husband, Julius Rosenberg, had convinced David's wife Ruth to recruit him while visiting him in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1944. He said Julius had passed secrets and thus linked him to the Soviet contact agent Anatoly Yakovlev. This connection would be necessary as evidence if there was to be a conviction for espionage of the Rosenbergs. On June 17, 1950, Julius Rosenberg was arrested on suspicion of espionage based on David Greenglass's confession. On August 11, 1950, Ethel Rosenberg was arrested after testifying before a grand jury. Another accused conspirator, Morton Sobel, fled with his family to Mexico City after Greenglass was arrested. They took assumed names, and he tried to figure out a way to reach Europe without a passport. Abandoning that effort, he returned to Mexico City. He claimed that he was kidnapped by members of the Mexican secret police and driven to the U.S. border, where he was arrested by U.S. forces. The U.S. government claimed Sobel was arrested by the Mexican police for bank robbery on August 16, 1950, and extradited the next day to the United States in Laredo, Texas. He was charged and tried with the Rosenbergs on one count of conspiracy to commit espionage. Grand jury. 20 senior government officials met secretly on February 8, 1950, to discuss the Rosenberg case. Gordon Dean, the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, said, quote, "It looks as though Rosenberg is the kingpin of a very large ring, and if there is any way of breaking him by having the shadow of a death penalty over him, we want to do it," end quote. Miles Lane, a member of the prosecution team, said that the case against Ethel Rosenberg was not too strong, but that it was, quote, "very important that she be convicted too, and given a stiff sentence." Their weak case against Ethel Rosenberg was resolved 10 days before the start of the trial, when David and Ruth Greenglass were interviewed a second time. They were persuaded to change their original stories. David originally had said that he'd passed the atomic data he'd collected to Julius on a New York street corner. After being interviewed this second time, he said that he had given this information to Julius in the living room of the Rosenbergs' New York apartment. Ethel, at Julius's request, had taken his notes and typed them up. In her re-interview, Ruth Greenglass expanded on her husband's version. Quote, "Julius then took the info into the bathroom and read it, and when he came out, he called Ethel and told her she had to type this information immediately. Ethel then sat down at the typewriter, which she placed on a bridge table in the living room, and proceeded to type the information that David had given to Julius." End quote. As a result of this new testimony, all charges against Ruth Greenglass were dropped. On August 11th, Ethel Rosenberg testified before a grand jury. For all questions, she asserted her right to not answer, as provided by the U.S. Constitution's Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination. FBI agents took her into custody as she left the courthouse. Her attorney asked the U.S. commissioner to parole her in his custody over the weekend so that she could make arrangements for her two young children. The request was denied. Julius and Ethel were put under pressure to incriminate others involved in the spy ring. Neither offered any further information. On August 17th, the grand jury returned an indictment alleging 11 overt acts. Both Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were indicted, as were David Greenglass and Anatoly Yakovlev. Trial and conviction. The trial of the Rosenbergs and Sobel on federal espionage charges began on March 6, 1951, in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. George Irving Kaufman presided over the trial, with Assistant U.S. Attorney Irving Sapol leading the prosecution and criminal defense lawyer Emmanuel Block representing the Rosenbergs. The prosecution's primary witness, David Greenglass, said that he turned over to Julius Rosenberg a sketch of the cross-section of an implosion-type atom bomb. This was the Fat Man bomb dropped on Nagasaki, Japan, as opposed to a bomb with the gun method triggering device used in the Little Boy bomb dropped on Hiroshima. He also testified that his sister, Ethel Rosenberg, typed notes containing U.S. nuclear secrets in the Rosenberg apartment in September 1945. The Rosenbergs both remained defiant as the trial progressed. During testimony, they asserted their right under the U.S. Constitution's Fifth Amendment not to incriminate themselves when asked about their involvement in the Communist Party or their activities with its members. On March 29, 1951, the Rosenbergs were convicted of espionage. They were sentenced to death on April 5th under Section 2 of the Espionage Act of 1917, which provides that anyone convicted of transmitting or attempting to transmit to a foreign government information relating to the national defense may be imprisoned for life or put to death. Prosecutor Roy Cohn later claimed that his influence led to both Kaufman and Sapol being appointed to the Rosenberg case and that Kaufman imposed the death penalty based on Cohn's personal recommendation. Cohn later played a major role as chief counsel to Senator Joseph McCarthy during the House Un-American Activities Committee, UHAC, hearings. In imposing the death penalty, Kaufman noted that he held the Rosenbergs responsible not only for espionage, but also for American deaths in the Korean War. Quote, I consider your crime worse than murder. I believe your conduct in putting into the hands of the Russians the A-bomb years before our best scientists predicted Russia would perfect the bomb has already caused, in my opinion, the communist aggression in Korea, with the resultant casualties exceeding 50,000, and who knows but that millions more of innocent people may pay the price of your treason. Indeed, by your betrayal, you undoubtedly have altered the course of history to the disadvantage of our country. No one can say that we do not live in a constant state of tension. We have evidence of your treachery all around us every day, for the civilian defense activities throughout the nation are aimed at preparing us for an atom bomb attack. End quote. Julius Rosenberg claimed the case was a political frame-up. After conviction. Campaign for clemency. After the publication of an investigative series in the National Guardian and the formation of the National Committee to Secure Justice in the Rosenberg case, some Americans came to believe both Rosenbergs were innocent or had received too harsh a sentence, particularly Ethel. A grassroots campaign was started to try to prevent the couple's execution. Between the trial and the executions, there were widespread protests and claims of anti-Semitism. The charges of anti-Semitism were widely believed abroad, but not among the vast majority in the United States. At a time when American fears about communism were high, the Rosenbergs did not receive support from mainstream Jewish organizations. The American Civil Liberties Union refused to acknowledge any violations of civil liberties in the case. Across the world, especially in Western European capitals, there were numerous protests with picketing and demonstrations in favor of the Rosenbergs, along with editorials in otherwise pro-American newspapers and a plea for clemency from the Pope. President Eisenhower, supported by public opinion and the media at home, ignored the overseas demands. Jean-Paul Sartre, a Marxist existentialist philosopher and writer who won the Nobel Prize for Literature, described the trial as, quote, a legal lynching which smears with blood a whole nation. By killing the Rosenbergs, you have quite simply tried to halt the progress of science by human sacrifice, magic, witch hunts, autos de fe, sacrifices. We are here getting to the point. Your country is sick with fear. You are afraid of the shadow of your own bomb, end quote. Others, including non-communists such as Jean Cocteau, Albert Einstein, and Harold Urey, a Nobel Prize-winning physical chemist, as well as communists or left-leaning artists such as Nelson Algren, Bertolt Brecht, Dashiell Hammett, Frida Kahlo, and Diego Rivera, protested the position of the American government in what the French termed the U.S. Dreyfus Affair. Einstein and Urey pleaded with President Truman to pardon the Rosenbergs. In May 1951, Pablo Picasso wrote for the communist French newspaper L'Humanité, quote, the hours count, the minutes count. Do not let this crime against humanity take place, end quote. The All-Black Labor Union International Longshoremen's Association Local 968 stopped working for a day in protest. Cinema artists such as Fritz Lang registered their protest. Pope Pius XII appealed to President Dwight D. Eisenhower to spare the couple, but Eisenhower refused on February 11, 1953. All other appeals were also unsuccessful. Execution. The United States Federal Bureau of Prisons did not operate an execution chamber when the Rosenbergs were sentenced to death. They were transferred to New York State's Sing Sing Correctional Facility in Ossining, New York, for execution. The execution was delayed from the originally scheduled date of June 18th because Supreme Court Associate Justice William O. Douglas had granted a stay of execution on the previous day. The stay resulted from intervention in the case by Fike Farmer, a Tennessee lawyer whose efforts had previously been scorned by the Rosenbergs' attorney, Emanuel Hirsch Bloch. The execution was scheduled for 11 p.m. that evening, during the Jewish Sabbath, which begins and ends around sunset. Bloch asked for more time, filing a complaint that execution on the Sabbath offended the defendant's Jewish heritage. Rhoda Lacks, another attorney on the Rosenberg's defense team, also made this argument before Judge Kaufman. The defense's strategy backfired. Kaufman, who also stated his concerns about executing the Rosenbergs on the Jewish Sabbath, rescheduled the execution for 8 p.m., before sunset and the Jewish Sabbath, and before 11 p.m., the regular time for executions at Sing Sing. On June 19, 1953, Julius died after the first electric shock. Ethel's execution did not go smoothly. After she was given the normal course of 3 electric shocks, attendants removed the strapping and other equipment, only to have doctors determine that Ethel's heart was still beating. 2 more electric shocks were applied, and at the conclusion, eyewitnesses reported that smoke rose from her head. Joseph Frantzel, then State Electrician of New York, was the executioner. The funeral services were held in Brooklyn on June 21st. Ethel and Julius Rosenberg were buried at Wellwood Cemetery, a Jewish cemetery in Pine Lawn, New York. The Times reported that 500 people attended, while some 10,000 stood outside. Quote, the bodies had been brought from Sing Sing Prison by the National Rosenberg Committee, which undertook the funeral arrangements, and an all-night vigil was held in one of the largest mortuary chapels in Brooklyn. Many hundreds of people filed past the biers. Most of them clearly regarded the Rosenbergs as martyred heroes, and more than 500 mourners attended today's services, while a crowd estimated at 10,000 stood outside in burning heat. Mr. Bloch, their counsel, who delivered one of the main orations, bitterly exclaimed that America was living under the heel of a military dictator garbed in civilian attire. The Rosenbergs were sweet, tender, and intelligent, and the course they took was one of courage and heroism. End quote. The Rosenbergs were the only 2 American civilians to be executed for espionage-related activity during the Cold War. They were survived by their 2 minor children. Soviet nuclear program. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, investigated how much the Soviet spy ring helped the USSR to build their bomb. In 1945, Moynihan found physicist Hans Bethe estimated that the Soviets would be able to build their own bomb in 5 years. Thanks to information provided by their agents, Moynihan wrote in his book Secrecy, they did it in 4. Nikita Khrushchev, leader of the Soviet Union from 1953 to 1964, said in his posthumously published memoir that he, quote, cannot specifically say what kind of help the Rosenbergs provided us, but that he learned from Joseph Stalin and Vyacheslav Molotov that they, quote, had provided very significant help in accelerating the production of our atomic bomb. Boris V. Brockovich, the engineer who later became director of Chelyabinsk 40, the plutonium production reactor and extraction facility that the Soviet Union used to create its first bomb material, called Khrushchev a silly fool. He said Soviets had developed their own bomb by trial and error. You sat the Rosenbergs in the electric chair for nothing, he said. We got nothing from the Rosenbergs. The notes, allegedly typed by Ethel, apparently contained little that was directly used in the Soviet atomic bomb project. According to Alexander Feklazov, the former Soviet agent who was Julius's contact, the Rosenbergs did not provide the Soviet Union with any useful material about the atomic bomb. Quote, he, Julius, didn't understand anything about the atomic bomb, and he couldn't help us, end quote. Later developments. Venona decryptions. In 1995, the results of the Venona decryption project were released by the U.S. government, showing Julius Rosenberg's role as the leader of a productive ring of spies. They show Ethel's role was more limited. Neither the Venona decryptions nor the Vasiliev notebooks published online in 2009 supported historians' assertions about Ethel having a more active role. These historians continued to assert that Julius had reported to the Soviets that Ethel had persuaded Ruth Greenglass to travel to New Mexico to recruit David as a spy. Testimony from Greenglass's trial is not supported by declassified Soviet documents. This suggests that both Greenglasses were enthusiastic recruits into Soviet espionage, needing no persuasion from either Ethel or Julius Rosenberg. 21st Century, Changing Accounts and the 2000 Release of Grand Jury Testimony. In 2001, David Greenglass recanted his testimony about his sister having typed the notes. He said, quote, I frankly think my wife did the typing, but I don't remember, end quote. He said he gave false testimony to protect himself and his wife Ruth, and that he was encouraged by the prosecution to do so. Quote, my wife is more important to me than my sister, or my mother or my father, okay, and she was the mother of my children, end quote. He refused to express remorse for his decision to betray his sister, saying only that he did not realize that the prosecution would push for the death penalty. He stated, quote, I would not sacrifice my wife and my children for my sister, end quote. In September 2008, the National Archives released most of the grand jury testimony related to prosecution of the Rosenbergs as a result of a suit by the National Security Archive at George Washington University historians and journalists. These revealed irreconcilable differences between Ruth Greenglass's grand jury testimony of August 1950 and the testimony she gave at trial. At the grand jury, she was asked, didn't you write the information down on a piece of paper? She replied, yes, I wrote the information down on a piece of paper and Julius Rosenberg took it with him. But at the trial, she testified that Ethel Rosenberg typed up notes about the atomic bomb. The extent of distortion by the prosecution was shown in their effort to gain a conviction of Ethel Rosenberg. Numerous articles were published in 2008 related to the Rosenberg case. Deputy Attorney General of the United States William P. Rogers, who had been part of the prosecution of the Rosenbergs, discussed their strategy at the time in relation to seeking the death sentence for Ethel. He said they had urged the death sentence for Ethel in an effort to extract a full confession from Julius. He reportedly said she called our bluff, as she made no effort to push her husband to any action. Morton Sobel. In 2008, Morton Sobel was interviewed after the revelations from grand jury testimony. He admitted that he had given documents to the Soviet contact, but said these had to do with defensive radar and weaponry. He confirmed that Julius Rosenberg was, quote, in a conspiracy that delivered to the Soviets classified military and industrial information on the atomic bomb, and he never told me about anything else that he was engaged in, end quote. He said that he thought the hand-drawn diagrams and other atomic bomb details that were acquired by David Greenglass and passed to Julius were of little value to the Soviet Union and were used only to corroborate what they had already learned from the other atomic spies. He also said that he believed Ethel Rosenberg was aware of her husband's deeds but took no part in them. In a subsequent letter to the New York Times, Sobel denied that he knew anything about Julius Rosenberg's alleged atomic espionage activities and that the only thing he knew for sure was what he himself did in association with Julius Rosenberg. Rosenberg children. The Rosenbergs' two sons, Michael and Robert, spent years trying to prove the innocence of their parents. They were orphaned by the executions and were not adopted by any relatives. They were adopted by the high school teacher, poet, songwriter, and social activist Abel Mirapol, author of the popular song Strange Fruit, and his wife, Anne, and they assumed the Mirapol surname. After Morton Sobel's 2008 confession, they acknowledged their father had been involved in espionage, but said that whatever atomic bomb information he passed to the Russians was, at best, superfluous. The case was riddled with prosecutorial and judicial misconduct. Their mother was convicted on flimsy evidence to place leverage on her husband, and neither deserved the death penalty. Michael and Robert co-wrote a book about their and their parents' lives, We Are Your Sons, The Legacy of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, 1975. Robert wrote a later memoir, An Execution in the Family, One Son's Journey, 2003. In 1990, he founded the Rosenberg Fund for Children, a nonprofit foundation that provides support for children of targeted liberal activists and youth who are targeted activists. Michael's daughter, Ivy Mirapol, directed a 2004 documentary about her grandparents, Heir to an Execution, which was featured at the Sundance Film Festival. Campaign for exoneration of Ethel Rosenberg. In 2015, following the most recent grand jury transcript release, Michael and Robert Mirapol called on U.S. President Barack Obama's administration to acknowledge that Ethel Rosenberg's conviction and execution was wrongful and issue a proclamation to exonerate her. Similarly, on September 28, 2015, the 100th anniversary of Ethel's birth, 11 members of the New York City Council issued a proclamation stating that, quote, "the government wrongfully executed Ethel Rosenberg," and Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer officially recognized the injustice suffered by Ethel Rosenberg and her family and declared it Ethel Rosenberg Day of Justice in the Borough of Manhattan. In March 2016, Michael and Robert, via the Rosenberg Fund for Children, launched a petition campaign calling on President Obama and U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch to formally exonerate Ethel Rosenberg before the administration left office in January 2017. In October 2016, the CBS News show 60 Minutes presented the story of the Rosenbergs' children and their quest for their mother's exoneration. However, no U.S. administration has taken action. Artistic representations. The E.L. Doctorow novel, The Book of Daniel, 1971, is based on the Rosenberg case as seen through the eyes of a fictionalized son. Doctorow wrote the screenplay of the Sidney Lumet film Daniel, starring Timothy Hutton. Robert Coover's The Public Burning, 1977, dealt with the case. Unlike Doctorow, Coover uses real names for most protagonists of the case and uses a fictionalized Richard Nixon as his narrator for half of the chapters. This sparked a long delay in the publication of the novel, since publishing houses feared a lawsuit from Nixon. Ethel Rosenberg is a major supporting character in Tony Kushner's critically acclaimed play Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes, 1993, in which her ghost haunts a dying Roy Cohn. In the HBO 2003 miniseries adaptation of the play, she was portrayed by Meryl Streep. Ethel Rosenberg also appears in the memories of Cohn and then as a spirit to haunt a dying Cohn in the biography Citizen Cohn, as well as its HBO film adaptation. Gillian Cantor's The Hours Count, 2015, tells the fictional story of a woman who befriends Ethel and Julius Rosenberg and is drawn into their world of intrigue. In Audre Lorde's fictionalized autobiography, Zammy, the Rosenbergs appear repeatedly as victims of American McCarthyism. The main character in Sylvia Plath's novel, The Bell Jar, is morbidly interested in the Rosenbergs' case. The novel begins with the sentence, "It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York." Images of the Rosenbergs are engraved on a memorial in Havana, Cuba. The accompanying caption says they were murdered. Kurt Vonnegut's novel Breakfast of Champions features an oblique reference to the Rosenberg execution during a post-coital discussion of recent uses of the electric chair, page 160. The song Julius and Ethel by Bob Dylan is based on the Rosenberg case. See also Atom Spies, Soviet Atomic Bomb Project, McCarthyism, Joel Barr, Harry Gold, Klaus Fuchs, David Greenglass, Theodore Hall, Michael Mirapol, Robert Mirapol, William Pearl, Alfred Sarant, and Morton Sobel. This audio was recorded on July 29th, 2019.